Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
What is going on, folks? Welcome into the Fairways of Life show. Pleasure to have your company today, as in the last few hours, meaning within the last 24 hours news cycle in this world of golf, there has been breaking news of sorts. Sean Zak from golf.com reporting that a new equity program has apparently about to be revealed to players. It came out in a series of videos from the PGA Tour with details of how it impacts each individual player coming out today. But the equity program has broadly been broken down. You can see there on your television screen, $930 million initially being invested into four tiers of players. The money will vest over 8 years, 50% after 4 years, and then 75% after 6 years, and then a full vesting after 8 years. It is based on multiple levels of performance. And I will try to get into some details of what we know. And again, credit to golf.com with the information that we're receiving so far. As to, just before I get into the details of this, want to let you know that coming up in today's show, you guys are aware of the fact that we've been trying for the last few weeks to bring you prominent executives from the golf industry because of my personal philosophy that they represent a very important part of the industry. And I want you to hear directly from them. Agree, disagree, that's up to you, but at least it's an opportunity to hear from these leaders. And today we're going to be joined by, and I'm really excited about it, one that I think is completely distinctive by many measures himself, and that is Bob Parsons, who founded PXG. They are a partner with the Fairways of Life show, and it's for a couple of reasons. One is I like what they're doing, two is I like their equipment, and three, I like Bob. He's an American hero, he's a Marine, he's a Purple Heart recipient from his time in Vietnam, and he's not only unique in terms of where he stands in the golf industry, he's one of the most unique people that I've ever met, full stop. So he wrote a book, I got it here, Fire in the Hole. So he's going to be coming on to talk to us mostly, I would presume, about his book, although I'm going to ask him about the business too, on how things are going on that side with their, you know, Gen 6 product out and their new Black Ops driver, et cetera, because I have a feeling you guys would be interested in that, perhaps for your own games in the months that lie in store. So that is just around the corner. We'll get into the details of that. As to the details of this program, as best we can, let's try to break it down based upon the information that Sean shared in his article. So 193 eligible recipients. Group one, 36 players. They're going to share the lion's share of $750 million. That's an average of just over $20 million per player, for those of you doing the math. But again, you have to remember that that category of these star players is going to be paying out different amounts of money. So how much the bottom of the 36 player pile receives versus the top, I think will be distinctive. Group two are being referred to as steady performers and up-and-comers. This is based on FedEx Cup points over the last 3 years, so we understand. And there is, again, $75 million spread out amongst those 64 players. Group three, these are what I define them as field players, but they're upper field players. These are players that I would assume, there's 57 of them, and they're going to share $30 million. I would assume that they are all multiple-time winners. Some of them, I suspect, might be a little bit long in the tooth. And I would also suspect that salted into that group would be, for example, somebody that maybe won, you know, the FedEx Cup. It might have been a few years ago, but they won the FedEx Cup, you know, that they're in the mix. And we could start to speculate on who we think might fit in these different categories from players. Group four are past legends. There's $75 million set aside for 36 players, which, again, I'm going to be fascinated to see who those players are and how it breaks down. Again, to reiterate how we understand from the information that we have at this hour, Group 1 will be based upon this new definition, this category called career points, which means that they rated well at impact programs. Okay, that's a gray area to make sure that they get the stars. Right? I would say in that regard, you know, to me that seems like a Ricky Fowler category, just as an example, right? Even though he's one of players, and the players is going to be heavily weighted here. This is a PGA Tours program. You also have somebody that rated well in the impact programs, which means they connect with the audience, and this is about delivering the stars. This is about giving them motivation to say, stay with the PGA Tour, stay over time with the PGA Tour, let the money that you've got coming your way vest. And I'll explain that if you need me to, so that you're with them on a long-term basis, and they know that they can deliver you to the sponsors and to the fans, et cetera. And then the last piece there in Group 1, of course, one important events. I just mentioned the players specifically. It could be majors. It could be invitationals. It could be signature events. It could be World Golf Championships, et cetera. And then Group 2, as I mentioned to you, is basically based upon what you have done. There's a consistency element there, but right now they're telling us FedEx Cup points over the last 3 years. Well, if that's the case, that's where you're going to get the look of kind of up-and-coming players, because they don't have a large history that they're using. They're using a three-year pool, and that three-year pool should scoop up some players that are fairly new but have been playing well now, which I realize is going to raise the question of, well, what about a player that's on the threshold of breaking through and becoming a huge star? We all believe that there are great things in store for them, but they haven't done enough yet to qualify for these top tiers. How do you keep that player motivated? Well, according to Sean's article, there's a second wave of income coming in to those players, to grants, as they're calling it, not income, but grants, although they will have to pay taxes on these sums of money after they start to vest. Group 3, as I mentioned to you, I call them upper field players. It is based upon tournaments won, career money, number of times finishing in the top 25 in FedEx Cup. And then Group 4, again, the past legends. The caveat there on Group 4 is that the past legends must be alive. So, in other words, they're not paying money out to the estate of Arnold Palmer, as an example. The past legends have to be alive. And when you talk about those 36... I bet we could come up with a pretty good number of that category pretty quickly, but there's, I'm sure, a lot of people that are going to be sitting by their phone waiting to see if where they fall. Now, Sean's article did say that who gets into these respective groups and what they get paid respectively, that the tour intends to keep this information confidential. This is all coming from the fact that the Strategic Sports Group invested $1.5 billion into PGA Tour Enterprises. PGA Tour Enterprises is a for-profit entity. And my suspicion is that the way that this is going to work, first of all, I emphasize the fact that the money that the players are going to get, the grants, the equity, is vested, which means no matter what they tell you that you've got coming, you're not going to see any of it in your coffers until a minimum of 4 years. Well, in 4 years, given where the current status of the game is, the presumption is that we'll probably be on the other side of it 4 years from now. I'm not saying that's why they did this. I'm just giving you one guy's opinion. So 4 years from now, we'll probably have a much clearer picture of where everything is, right? And that's when the vesting starts, and it only starts at 50% at that time. and then 75% after 6 years, and then 100% after 8 years, to reiterate that again. So my sense is, from a business perspective, is that the Strategic Sports Group, with their investment in the creation of PGA Tour Enterprises, a for-profit commercial entity, usually when capital comes in like this, I'm going to call it, say, venture capital, investment capital, they're coming in with the intention of growing value. They're coming in with the intention of saying, well, if we put a little money in and a fresh coat of paint here and there, we're going to get money back in excess of what we put in. And my guess is that is where the ultimate payout of these equity sums is going to come from. Right? Because people are looking at it as a $1.5 billion budget and say, well, you've got 900 and what was it, $60 million? 930, I beg your pardon? That's going to be paid out. And then they do the math between that and $1.5 billion and say, well, what's this extra amount? Well, yeah, there is that second wave. But my guess is that the plan from a business perspective is to say, we don't even think we're going to have to touch the equity there. Because as the business grows and actual real commercial value money comes into this new entity, that is how it gets paid out, because it doesn't even start to vest for 4 years. So they've got a running start of time to build all this. Bear in mind, the new television rights contracts will be from 2030 onward. So in a few years, when they start negotiating that, they're going to have a sense of that source of revenue, which is prominent, as you could imagine. So that's what we know right now. The significance of this, of course, is because I think it bears this kind of analysis and perspective, is when we look across the spectrum of sport in general, where are we seeing this kind of involvement from players in equity in teams or leagues? How unique is it, that which is starting to form right before our eyes? Right, we saw what Messi did with the MLS in Miami, which you're saying effectively had a massive impact on the league, as well as the team, as well as him, to the tune of a minimum of $70 million, some estimated a year. Right? Another question that rolls through my head was, this equity program, would it have happened if June 6 didn't happen? Because after the announcement was made that the PGA Tour was in significant enough negotiations with PIF to hold press conferences and to make announcements, and a number of players, even to the likes of Rory McIlroy, where Rory McIlroy initially said he felt like the sacrificial lamb, quote unquote, right? There was a number of players behind the scenes that was like, whoa, 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 whoa. How did all this happen of this level of significance without us knowing and being a part of? And then this program comes out. Investment money comes from a completely different group of owners of a variety of different sports teams. And then a program comes out and says, okay, there's now an equity program in place for PGA Tour players. And clearly, at $750 million for 36 players, this equity program is a reflection of what we're seeing in the game at its highest levels, which is the thing that moves the needle, whether we like it or not, in their view, are star players. And right now, as money has been the thing that's been weaponized in the world of golf, this is an effort to say to players, your loyalty, this whole program is being framed around, or your continuation to be a part of the PGA Tour, will be rewarded with these sums of money. And it appears, although we're waiting for the details accordingly, and they will emerge, as you know, that as a player starts to, right before our eyes, we've seen it a million times, we can see them ascend, start to play better, start to gain confidence, maybe start to fulfill on promise. And when that happens, they move into different categories as future programs we know of, at least one that's already in the queue, are in place to make sure that those players are adequately compensated for the level that they are at. Huge, huge news. And again, what this means into the world of sport, what this is going to mean for player organizations in other leagues, I think we're going to see a seismic shift in the world of sports and equity and ownership as we move forward in the coming years. Absolutely fascinating. When we come back, we're going to be joined by an absolutely fascinating guest who I know that you're going to be interested to hear from. I will tell you some of what I read in his book, and I suspect that Bob will be talking about, is pretty hard. It's pretty tough. This is real life stuff. And when you're talking about frontline action in Vietnam, it's a lot different than talking about spin rates and distances. But we're going to do it. It's a road that we're going to go down because he is that unique an individual. The PGA Tour Superstore is the presenting sponsor of the Fairways of Life show. They're the number one golf retailer from coast to coast, almost 70 of their big, beautiful stores. And are they the reason why they're so successful? Of course, they're the reason why they're so successful. I don't think they're the primary reason, though. I think the primary reason is because of the people that are in those stores. They are professionals vested in your best interest. Shop with the pros at your happy place.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls. All so they can get you the perfect fit.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is back. Established in 1953, we serve golfers who demand excellence of their equipment. Designed by the game's best engineers, forged in the world's best foundries, and built to order in the USA. Don't settle for off-the-rack disappointment. Elevate your game with custom clubs at direct consumer pricing. Exclusively at BenHoganGolf.com. That's BenHoganGolf.com.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team. The absolute best golf club I have ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're going to love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Got it. I think I'm gonna go after PGA Tour.
Playing on the PGA Tour is not easy.
But you know what is easy?
Hitting the 524 series from Tour Edge.
Hitting linebackers and home runs used to be easy.
Out here, you're gonna need all the easy you can get.
Introducing the 524 series from Tour Edge. The easiest clubs you'll ever hit. Even the best players in the world can use a little easy.
I like the sound of that. Look out, PGA Tour.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
And it is an absolute delight, folks, to welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show from wherever around the world you're joining us today, whether that's coast to coast throughout the United States or around some other corner of the rest of the globe. Hello, one and all, and thank you. As I was telling you in segment one, I am super excited, super honored for our next guest. To me, Bob Parsons is a man that stands alone as a self-made man, by any definition that you choose to define that by. From his humble early roots with parents who were dealing with their own issues to harsh schooling at the hands of Catholic school nuns, each step in those early days were marked by hardship and marked by financial struggles. At the height of the Vietnam War, Bob's love for the USA led him to enlist in the Marines at 17 years old. He was quickly trained and shipped off to the front lines of Vietnam, where he not only saw heavy action and the experience would ultimately define the rest of his life, but Bob would return as a Purple Heart recipient and very much a changed man. Along the way, battles with PTSD resulting from, yes, his childhood traumas and the war experience would let him out to seek effective treatments for all who suffer. And through his Bob and Renee Parsons Foundation's countless charities and organizations have benefited from his massive mission to give back. Through his business engagements, which includes founding PXG, Bob has amassed billions of dollars in wealth. But he's a man whose true value is measured as much by the contents of his heart as those of his bank account. Absolute delight, as I mentioned, an honor to have Bob Parsons join us right now. Bob, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Bob's new book is called Fire in the Hole, The Untold Story of My Traumatic Life and Explosive Success. Here's a look at the new book. Bob, how are you doing? How's everything going?
You know what? If I was any better, Matt, I'd be you. You know I was going to tell you that, right?
I appreciate that. All right, first question I ask any author that comes on with us. This book, Fire in the Hole, what motivated you to write this?
Well, you know, I've had kind of an interesting life, to say the least. And, you know, in talking with my buddies that I served with during the Vietnam War, I mean, we'd be on ambush, you know, every night I was there together. And, of course, we'd talk, we'd get mail. If I didn't get any mail, I'd read their mail. If they didn't get any mail, they'd read my mail. And so you get to be kind of close, kind of quick. So, and just communicating them with them over the years. I mean, they've always said, Bob, you need to write a book. And, you know, and then other friends have told me this. And I've always wanted to kind of document, you know, the things that happened in my life for later generations. And so, you know, that's why. And, you know, actually, when I wrote the book, and with help with Laura Morton, who was the writer who worked with me, I had a couple goals. One goal was I wanted it to be raw. I wanted it to tell it like it is, and I think we've done that. And I wanted it to be, more than anything, I wanted it to be a good read. And I think we've done that too. And, you know, kept the chapter short, got right to the point, and so there you go. There's fire in a hole. And then, you know, after I finished writing it, I had it electronically, and you know, for a while, I just didn't think I wanted to publish it. You know, mostly because, you know, I didn't know that I wanted to, you know, spend the year working, you know, quite often, you know, many hours a day, to sell the thing. And the thing that tipped the scales for me is, you know, I let my buddies that I served with read it, and they all said to a man, you have to publish this book, if nothing else, for our brothers in the Marine Corps, you know, to show them how, you know, you dealt with PTSD, how you helped us with PTSD, and there you go. So I'm publishing the book.
I will get into the details as recounted in the book about Vietnam too, because it's absolutely fascinating. But the stories of when you recounted your youth, Bob, read to me like a screenplay. It had its share of trauma, obviously. It had its share of comedy. It had its share of triumph throughout. What was it like for you from, I guess the whole book would be cathartic, it's fair to say, but what was it like for you to recount those parts of your childhood that at times had to have been very hard to relive, but at other times it was kind of a celebration of a point in time?
Some of the things, you know, I remember thinking, you know, one of the things that I do, Matt, is I'm able to disassociate. And so, you know, I could take things and just put them on a shelf and not think about them. And, you know, that's helped me in business in many ways. And it also helped me get through the war because, you know, I lived through the war one day at a time, baby, and that was it. And my only goal, I figured I was going to get killed. And my only goal was be alive for mail call. And there you go. You know, the only parts, you know, in my youth, nothing really, you know, brought me to tears. You know, anything that had to do with maybe mom and dad and, you know, and them, you know, the Lord taking them and, you know, me seeing my mom after that and then my brother leaving. Now, I have a hard time with that. Yeah. And then talking about dealing with PTSD, has brought me to tears. And, you know, and I actually was taking some psychedelics when one time we were talking about the war with Laura. And, you know, I recalled a time that I had not thought about in years. And I literally flashed back to there. And I was actually there. And it was watching these guys who were on their way over to Vietnam. And this was after I'd been wounded. And it was about the tail end of my tour where I had, through, you know, a sequence of events, got into troop processing. And I was assigning them to planes. And then verifying their unit they were going to. And I spent a little bit of time in military intelligence, Matt, because, you know, I failed the fifth grade and wouldn't have graduated high school if I didn't join the Marine Corps. And, you know, you can, you'd be sure I was just exactly the type of guy they wanted in intelligence, right? But anyhow, because of I was in intelligence, I got to know who the hard luck units were, and to just see these guys who were my age, but I had aged a lot since the time I came there on the first day and I was put on a plane, and just seeing them and knowing what is ahead for them and that most likely, you know, if they were going to have a tough time coming home. If they did.
As I mentioned, so, when you joined the Marines at the height of the Vietnam War, were you aware? Was there any element of just being naive in that? Or were you fully aware of what was going on in Vietnam and that you were about to jump right into the middle of it?
Yeah, I knew that. I knew that. But, you know, I was 17. My buddies were 18. And we were invulnerable.
and your buddies, you know, Bob, how many were they, and did they come home?
Well, it was three of us, and of course we were in. I was in East Baltimore, and East Baltimore's a tough town. And my one buddy, his name is Aggie Sirokas, just a wonderful individual. When we came home on boot leave, he was stabbed to death. And so we lost Aggie, and he never even went to Vietnam. And then my other buddy, Charlie Mason, him and I both went over to Vietnam. And we got there 6 months after we enlisted. And Charlie was had a hand grenade, enemy hand grenade, laying down by his legs, and he went to throw it back, and he lost three limbs. And so he lives down in South Carolina. And the one thing I'll tell you, when you talk to him, he's one of the happiest guys you ever talked to.
Amazing. In your book, you write, quoting, "Vietnam shaped me in so many ways, and it changed me to the core. What I witnessed, what I went through, and how I survived is a big part of who I am today," close quote from Bob's book, Fire in the Hole. What is it about the Marines, if it's even possible to encapsulate it, that caused such massive changes in Bob Parson and something that you carry so close to your heart to this day?
Well, first of all, I owe everything I've ever accomplished in my life to the Marine Corps. And, you know, they taught me many things. But, I mean, you got to look at this through the glasses of, you know, when I was raised, my wife likes to say I was raised by wolves. But it wasn't quite by wolves. But, you know, I was neglected a lot. I mean, a lot. I mean, there was not a lot of love in the family. And, I mean, you know, I love my brother and love my little sister. But, I mean, you know, the rest of the stuff was, you know, they were all tied, mom and dad tied up in their own stuff. So when I got enlisted in the Marine Corps, that was my first real family. And I loved being part of it. And I mean, I loved being part of it. And so the Marine Corps taught me, when you consider that the importance of responsibility, that it's sacred. When you have a job to do, you know, they taught me discipline, that you know, you have the discipline to see it through, no matter how hard it is, no matter if you want to do it or you don't want to do it, you do it, and you do it to the best of your abilities. And they also taught me that I could accomplish more than I ever thought possible, and that I had a right to be proud. And they were right about all those things. They were all very important, and I took them all to heart.
More with the legendary Bob Parsons, who just penned the book Fire in the Hole. It is a story of his remarkable life and the impact that he is making on the world. Now, he alluded to a story of, and this happens throughout the book when you read it, there are bridges, there are connections to one incident leading to remarkably another. And that includes when Bob Parsons saved the life of a fellow Marine. And in doing so, it circled back around. It could be very much argued that it saved his life as well. That as we continue in the Fairways of Life show.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls. All so they can get you the perfect fit.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is back. Established in 1953, we serve golfers who demand excellence of their equipment. Designed by the game's best engineers, forged in the world's best foundries, and built to order in the USA. Don't settle for off-the-rack disappointment. Elevate your game with custom clubs at direct consumer pricing. Exclusively at BenHoganGolf.com. That's BenHoganGolf.com.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team. The absolute best golf club I have ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're going to love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football.net. I think I'm going to go after the PGA Tour.
Playing on the PGA Tour is not easy.
But you know what is easy?
Getting the 524 series from Tour Edge.
Getting linebackers and home runs used to be easy.
Out here, you're going to need all the easy you can get.
Introducing the 524 series from Tour Edge. The easiest clubs you'll ever hit. Even the best players in the world can use a little easy.
I like the sound of that. Look out, PGA Tour.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first-of-its-kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow-me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit ZeroFriction.com/Stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
As we welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show on this day when we have a very special guest, Bob Parsons, founder of PXG, author of the new book that's called Fire in the Hole. This is a recounting of his remarkable life. And one of those remarkable stories was about when Bob was seeing heavy action on the front lines in Vietnam. An injured Marine was down, and there was an evac helicopter coming in that had to land exactly where this man was. Bob, could you recount that story with us and what happened?
Well, what happened was a Marine by the name of Ermal Hunt, again, had a hand grenade land next to him. He picked it up to throw it back, and it went up about head height. And the damn thing blew his arm off, Matt, blew the side of his face off, part of his leg off, stomach out. But didn't kill him. And I mean, he was perforated, blood everywhere. And so the Marines with him were, you know, you consider this here. When I got to my squad, I was one of the replacements for guys they lost a few days earlier when they were ambushed, and they had four guys killed, one guy seriously wounded, and the new squad leader had been in the bush 6 weeks, and he's just turned 19. He was calling the shots, and that was the senior man. So it wasn't a lot of experience there. And the other squad, and then a squad that we joined up with that was Ermal's, also didn't have a lot of experience. So when these guys seen this horrific wounding of Ermal Hunt, I mean, a lot of them got sick on the spot. And that's what happened to this guy, Blackwell. He got sick. He was standing in a rice paddy, and he was losing his cookies a little bit, but he was obviously in shock. And so the Huey was coming in, and it was going to land. I could see it was going to land right on top of him. So I ran and started pushing him, push. We hit a rice paddy dike, fell ahead, you know, over into this nasty ass water, and you know, it missed us both. I mean, no doubt I saved his life. And so he, you know, later, you know, he saved mine.
That story of how he saved yours is, again, folks, recounted in the book Fire in the Hole by Bob Parsons. It's an incredible story. You go effectively AWOL because you were due to go back to the front lines at Vietnam 7 a.m. the next morning. They tell you to be back by midnight. At some time of roughly 3 a.m., it seems, in just horrendous pouring rain, you're in some dark part of the city, and you see the silhouette of someone walking towards you in the darkness that you actually say in the book thought was a ghost. What happened at that moment?
Well, See, I mean, we're in combat all the time. So about a week or 2 weeks after I saved Blackwell from the Huey, his squad is out by itself and they're ambushed, and he has a hand grenade come in next to him, or it might have been an RPG round, something like that. But it blew up, and it, you know, and he was hurt bad, and so he was medevaced, and we were told that he died. And so what happened was, the reason why I was there the night before I was going back to Vietnam is because the Navy had lost my payroll records. So the whole time I was wounded, and I was in Japan, and all my buddies are going off base, and I come back to Okinawa and they're going off base, and I finally get my orders to go back to Vietnam, and they say to me, "Oh, by the way, your payroll record showed up, and here's $800. Well, Matt, they might as well have handed me $80,000, because I mean, a dollar went a long way there. So they said, you know, here's your pay, you know, be back at midnight. So I go out, and I mean, I whoop it up. I mean, I'm going to Vietnam the next day. So I whoop it up, and I'm supposed to be back at midnight. I don't go back. I'm walking down the street. The rain is coming down almost sideways, and I'm looking for something else to do. And I run into Blackwell. He's walking up the street towards me, and I'm thinking, who is? I mean, I know I'm not this drunk. I'm a little drunk, but not this drunk. And it turns out it was him. And so he told me he had been wounded the third time. See, when you're in the Marines, if you're wounded three times, you can opt out of going back to combat. And so that's what he did. And so he was stationed in intelligence on Okinawa. And then he said to me, he goes, you know, you saved my life. He says, we just had a guy who's a courier, and also he runs this little printing press, both of which you can do. He says, I can get you that job because we haven't filled it yet. And I said, all right, that's interesting. And he said, he goes, let me know what time, you know, you leave for Vietnam. And I said, I'm leaving at 7 a.m. in the morning. Now, keep in mind, it's about 3 a.m. there. He says, man, I don't know that I can get it done that quick. So I said, brother, it's okay. You know, I said, if you can, fine. And if not, you know, don't worry. You know, I don't mind going back. And so, you know, we say our goodbyes. And then I go back to base, immediately get arrested. And they take me to the officer today. I tell him I'm going back to Vietnam later that morning. And he just says, you know, get him out of here. And they take me back to the barracks, and I wake up the next morning with a hangover from hell at 7 o'clock. And a troop handler says, Parsons, you have orders to report to headquarters company, basically intelligence. So that's where I went. And, you know, Blackwell got it done. And, you know, he good chance he saved my life, because, you know, I tell you what, you know, I'm not the quickest guy and so forth. And I mean, we're in combat all the time, you know, who knows, but I'll tell you what, I am where I am now because of Blackwell. God bless him.
So Bob Parsons comes home from Vietnam, and Bob recently told me that he picked up a book of careers, and he said, if I'd started at the back of the book, I'd be a zoologist. He started at the front. He becomes an accountant. Parsons Technologies, GoDaddy, immensely successful companies. And then you decide to start PXG. And through all that, it reminds me of a quote that I read in the book that said, I'm quoting from Bob Parsons, quote, definition of courage is being afraid of something and doing it anyway, close quote. Bob, your career from a business perspective, leading you now to, with everything else you're involved in, but also PXG prominently as you're on a golf show as we speak, Is it always a story of with success, you first have to have a fear of something and realize that you can overcome it with hard work, with ingenuity, with the right people?
You know, it does. It takes a certain degree of bravery. I mean, you know, it's not the type of bravery that, you know, that you have when you go into combat, but it's the type of bravery nevertheless, because you're doing something unknown. You're going to risk failing. And, you know, if there's a stigma associated with that none of us want. So, you know, you just got to get past that. And, you know, you just got to say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to make this work. And, you know, I've always, with everything I've done, I've had people say to me, well, suppose it don't work. And then I always reply, yeah, but suppose it does. And there you go.
Did you have those same kind of messages of advice from people when you told them that, hey, I've decided to start PXG? I mean, many have heard the story that you were mad about golf and you invested a great deal in golf equipment, couldn't find exactly what you wanted, so you created your own, and you didn't release it to the public until you knew it was better than anything else that you had tried previously. Did that happen with PXG? Did you have those that told you that you'd be crazy to do this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Still do. Now, absolutely still have people tell me I'm nuts. And you know what? I've got a couple ex-wives that'll say, yeah, you're right. Yes.
when you came out with the Black Ops, with PXG's Gen 6, how has it been received so far, Bob? I think most of people from the Fairways of Life show know that PXG is a partner with us, and I'm an ambassador for and play the PXG equipment, which I love. The driver, the Black Ops driver, is the best that I've ever seen from you guys. But I'm curious about what you're hearing in terms of response from people in the marketplace.
Well, it's they're blown away by it. I mean, it's the driver. I mean, you know, it's designed to be, you know, as long as anything I know of, and longer actually. And it is also, you know, we discovered this technology where no matter where you hit it on the face, you know, it's going to go fine. And it is quite a breakthrough. I mean, it's great technology. And you know what Arthur C. Clarke said about he said any sufficiently advanced technology is basically indistinguishable from magic. So I'm going to tell you what, this driver's got a lot of magic going for it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There is a lot of magic with that. Your whole life, and it's recounted in his new book, Fire in the Hole, is amazing from the standpoint that my first inclination is, Bob, that one book is not enough. Because anytime anyone gets an opportunity to hang out with you, have dinner with you, hear stories, et cetera, certain things come up. And one of those that pops into my head, for example, is the relationship that you had with Muhammad Ali. I thought it'd be a cool way to end this discussion, because it just gives one more glimpse into the very myriad of experiences that you've had in your life. What was that relationship like with between you and the greatest boxer of all time?
Well, I knew the champ. I just knew him. I met him a number of times. You know, I thought he was an incredible man. He is the likes of which this world, you know, may take us a while before we see somebody rise like that again. You know, I'll tell you something. I used to spend a lot of time in Africa, and I would go to villages that, in places, especially in Zimbabwe, they were so remote, and they had no radio, no television, no magazines. And the champ gave me, when he heard I was going to Africa, he said, he signed a bunch of photos, about 50 small photos, and I still have most of them. And he told me, he said, if you ever get into trouble, tell them you're my friend and show them one of these, and you'll get out of trouble. Well, I never did get into that kind of trouble, But I would show these photos to the people in these villages. And you know what? They always would do the same thing. They would lean back and they would smile and they would go, ah, the boxer. And they knew who he was. I mean, oh my goodness. You know, I almost couldn't believe it. And how they did, who knows? But they did. And I think it's just because, you know, he was such an incredible man, and he was such a wonderful, and he was a kind soul, and he was generous, and very few people know that side of him. But, I was blessed to know him, and, you know, at least a little bit that I did.
It's amazing. All of it is amazing. Again, the book is called Fire in the Hole by Bob Parsons. You're obviously familiar with everything that he is doing with PXG and the impact that that is having on the golf industry, from the childhood that he had to fought his way through those streets, up through the Marines, a tripwire that led to a Purple Heart, and then coming out and building business after business after business, and now having a foundation that is impacting countless lives with the generosity from this man's heart. It shows you that people are not always a product of their environment, that within them they can have goodness regardless of the experiences that they have, and can actually draw goodness from those experiences, however dark. Fire in the Hole is an incredible story of an incredible man. That man is Bob Parsons. And sir, as ever, thank you for your time. Thank you for what you have done, for the service that you and other Marines have provided to the United States. And thank you for what you're doing for the golf industry too, through PXG.
All right. Thanks, Matt. You're the best, buddy.
It's good to see you again. Folks, we'll be back with more of the Fairways of Life show right after this.
I got ball fit in 2000, went on a little run. Then Bridgestone fit me again, and I went on another one. I just got fit again for the new Tour BX. The ball fitting's been helping me. Will it help you?
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports, or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Pick up your Stride today at a local PGA Tour superstore near you or at zerofriction.com/stride. Stride, your personal caddy.
Thank you.
As we welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show on this Wednesday, we covered a lot of ground today. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Bob Parsons. I mean, long form interviews like that, I understand you're either vested in it or you're not. In his story, I just think it's so powerful. You know, everyone believes like someone like him that has built that kind of wealth that somehow they were born into it, and he wasn't. And then the fact that he and his wife have made this commitment to give it away is fascinating. By the way, Dom, with everything we were talking about in segment one about this new equity program, did you do a question of the day built around that, or not to lead you, but what was your question of the day?
It was, in fact, about that. It is, will this equity plan change how athletes across all sports are paid forever? Is this going to change the game? Yes or no? 75% are saying no. And I disagree with that. I think it's going to change things forever. 10 years from now, I think we'll know.
Yeah, I think, as I was mentioning at the end of the first segment, when whether it's player organizations or whether it's the council of players in individual, you know, contract negotiations, how could they possibly not say, oh, no, I want a piece of equity? And I don't realize the NFL has taken a vote amongst owners and said, no, we're not going to do that. But I just wonder how much that can stand up against the force of the players over time. Thank you so much for your company today, folks. Pleasure as ever to have it. I am on my way up to NBC Sports. I'll be hosting pre- and post-games this week. Looking forward to it. It's our classic. We'll see you. Bye.